Hi, Becky.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Because you're the only one with your video on, and you're first. You're at the top left of my screen.
Yeah. Well, we live in Salt Lake City-ish in a suburb. I have three grown kids, two daughters and a son, married, retired, and both my husband and I are retired. And our situation, I outlined to you in the email, our son rents a basement apartment from us. Which is nice for him.
I remember this message.
Yeah.
Or this correspondence. I correspond with a lot of people. So
I'm sure you do.
Living in the basement apartment. I remember that part.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So we're just dealing with this and
hoping. And how long has he been with you?
He moved back to Utah in 2017.
2017.
Mm-hmm. So that's when it all came down.
He's not in great shape, right?
No, not in great shape.
And he's been in this kind of bad shape for
off and on the whole time. Yeah. It's, he did start his own business, but that's even real challenging too, you know, with people. So we helped him with that, 'cause we figured, you know, he wasn't going to be able to work anywhere. So, so that's, we got him going with that. And he's very passionate about it. He's a coffee roaster.
And he's a what?
A coffee roaster.
Oh,
so he has a good, you know, his little coffee shop and,
not in the basement.
No. Not anymore. It actually started out there.
that'd be quite something.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So he's it's a daily challenge.
Sorry.
As you know.
Well, here. my situation is a little different than yours in that I didn't start dating my partner until he was already out and he was probably 6 years out of prison when I met him.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not saying he had his life all under control. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have his life all under control now, but you know, it's kind of like more under control. And it's
right.
I didn't have to go through the really hard, terrible, scary part with the, you know,
probation,
indictments and the you know, lawyers and all that, scary stuff.
That was ugly. Yeah.
All right. We got four more minutes. I'm going to introduce Jason when we get there. You're next, but I'm going to, since I see Julie Sherdian.
Pierre, it's French.
How do you say it?
Well, yes, it is French, and it is chrétien. Oh. But we just say chrétien because that makes it easy.
Okay. So where are you from, Julie?
I'm from Washington, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's just south of Pittsburgh.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been in the movement?
I'm just starting. My husband is at Elkton, Ohio, in Lisbon, Ohio, and I am just now getting into things that might be helpful.
How long has he been away?
Year and a half.
And how much longer will he be gone?
Hopefully not long. He's going for compassionate release because he is 68 years old and he has like over 20 medical issues. So we're hoping that, you know, it might go that way. But if he has to serve everything, he'll be out in 25.
Okay.
October 25. He's almost halfway there.
Yeah. It could be worse.
Well, I guess. It could be. Yeah, because
nothing good about it.
It could have been a lot longer. So we're thankful that it's not.
All right. I think we have time for at least one more quick before 7 o'clock starts. How about Michael C. with the beautiful cityscape behind you?
Well, thank you. Hi, I'm Mike from Philadelphia, PA. I'm on the board of PARSL, which is the Pennsylvania chapter of NARSL. Also involved in another nonprofit doing advocacy. In fact, we're going to have our usual Tuesday night meeting right after this one. So it's going to be back to back. Nice to see you. And welcome, Jason, and everyone else. I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Cool. My daughter lives in Philly. I just got off the phone with her immediately before we opened this call.
It's a great city.
One more. Melinda, tell us about yourself in a minute or less.
All right. Hey, I'm Lynn Murphy. I'm impacted by the criminal justice system. My autistic son is incarcerated at the state system here in Pennsylvania. And Julie, I'm up in Erie, so I'm not too far away from you. With any luck, my son will be out April 18th of 2025.
All right. Still not seven. So that means I get one more. Mike, want to introduce yourself?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good. I spoke a couple times. Calling from Massachusetts, or calling in from Massachusetts. And I guess you would say sort of a survivor, if you will. Sort of lived this experience when I was in high school. And it has impacted me all the way through my, you know, into my adulthood. I'm almost 40 now and I'm still dealing with it. So I've been sort of advocating for juvenile justice reform here in Massachusetts. Yeah, I mean, just trying to stay in tune, you know, make connections, you know, learn, spread awareness, spread the word here. You know, every single time I learn something from these calls, and I think it helps with the therapy that I deal with, you know, on a daily basis. I'm doing my therapy appointment, my homework right now for tomorrow. So
is this real therapy or fake therapy?
No, I have PTSD from the experience that I lived through. And I have a little bit of generational family trauma. I have PTSD from the registry and the situation that took place. And so I, you know, I have a whole workbook and we work through all these emotions and, you know, the nightmares that I have from this stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on there. So,
yeah, but when I mean fake therapy, I mean the court sponsored like nonsense therapy.
Oh, no, no, this is my personal health insurance.
Actual therapy.
That,
okay.
that pays for this stuff. You know, I was having some traumatic nightmares. I would wake up like covered in sweat. And I would be like in a prison surrounded by, you know, people that I went to high school with, and, you know, just traumatic nightmares. And I have to record them the next morning when I wake up. And it's horrible. It really is. Every couple of weeks.
Hey, I mean, we're going to go to the speaker right after this, but I just read an article yesterday about a really new treatment for PTSD that is like more effective by a long shot, they say, than the other kind of therapy or the other kind of PTSD treatment. Yep. If you put your email in the chat, I'll send you the link to the article.
All right, cool. I'll
it's
do that.
Fancy and new. I don't remember what it's called. There's an R in it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of fun stuff that involves like art, like obviously animals and stuff like that. You know, just finding a way to ground yourself and bring yourself back, you know, out of the moment.
Well, this one claims that like, it claims that it's not like open-ended all into the future, that they can do it in a certain number of settings, and that it's really research driven, supposed to be really good. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to introduce Jason. If I can find him. So I met Jason at the conference in Houston a couple, whatever month ago, and listened to him give this talk that he's about to give to us, and thought, I bet my people would love this talk. So I went up to him after the show and like fanboyed him and got his info. And then when I had this cancellation and I texted and said, is there any chance you could do this for me tomorrow? His answer was sure. Yes, I'll be right. I'll be there. So I'm really excited to introduce him to you. Jason is the president of a group called, crap, now I'm forgetting it. Help me out, Jason.
Restorative Action Alliance.
Restorative Action Alliance. That's right. And he also runs this cool podcast called, Amplified Voices with Amber Blangus, who I think was registered and might be with us. I don't know. And that's another thing that I'd love to maybe have her on sometime in the future. And if you haven't listened to Amplified Voices yet, you can just find it wherever you find your podcasts. It's a really good, really good show. They run it simultaneously and they've got really good banter and talk about good stuff. Okay, so Jason, I'm gonna allow screen sharing so that if you wanted to, when you're ready,
yeah.
Share your screen, you can do that.
All right, yeah, before I start, yeah, thank you. So, so a couple things regarding Amplified Voices, I'll mention a little bit later on about that, but I do see a couple of people we've had on as guests here tonight. We have Marty, we have Carol. I don't know if I didn't go through all the names, but those two popped out. So hello to both of you and everybody. So thank you, you know, and reached out to me last night and said, would you do this talk that I gave a couple weeks ago? Now it's like 3 weeks, I guess, at the NARSOL conference You'll see it hasn't been updated. Not much has changed in the last month. So it says June on the thing I'm about to show you. I'll even start with the same story that I told when I gave this thing originally. And then I'll tell you a little bit about myself before we get going. But before, when I was pulling this presentation together, I went out to ChatGPT. Now I'm looking at just myself. That's really crazy. All right. So so I went out to ChatGPT. I don't know if everybody's not familiar with that. It's this artificial intelligence. You can ask it all sorts of questions. And I said, I'm going to be giving a talk at a conference, at a workshop, and it's going to be to people who have been impacted by the criminal legal system, specifically with sex offenses. And it's people who care about them or people who have committed the offenses themselves. But I'd like to start the talk with a joke. What would be a good joke? And ChatGPT came back and it said, that's probably not a good idea. So I tried again. I said, well, you know, everybody needs a little bit of humor. I'd like to tell a joke, something that might be everybody could relate to. And once again, it came back and it said, well, you should really start with empathy. Don't tell the joke, you know, don't tell a joke. So unfortunately, that's my story. I don't really have a joke to share, but I love jokes. So, you know, later, if you've got something that's funny, let me know. So let's see. I'm also a morning person. So here we go. So who am I? As Ann said, I'm currently serving as a president of the Restorative Action Alliance. We're out of New York, Connecticut, New Jersey. I personally live in Connecticut, right outside of Hartford. I do, I'll share more about that a little bit later. I'm also, as Ann mentioned, co-host with Amber of Amplified Voices. I'll share more about that. I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a son. I have a bunch of educational work credentials. I've been in leadership roles in Fortune 50 companies, and I've worked in distribution centers as a picker, and I've done, you know, everything in between. So I have a bunch of lived experience. So, and then the other thing to share is that in 2021, actually, before I jump to that, I was on the registry in Connecticut for 10 years. I was on probation for 5. I was never incarcerated. But in 2021, I went in front of the Board of Pardons and Parole in Connecticut, and I was granted a pardon and full expungement. So my record now is clean, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about that process for me and some of the things that I learned along the way. And I recognize that, you know, I want to start off the bat when I'm talking to people from all over the country, I recognize that a pardon at this point is not available to the majority of people. However, there are two things I want to point out. One is, the things that I learned can also be applied to a whole host of things, whether you're looking to reduce the time that you're on probation, or you're looking to change, if you're in a state that has tiering and you want to go down a tiering level, you know, any type of relief that you're looking to do, if there's residency restrictions, any type of relief, the same sort of thinking and things that I learned, I'm going to share, you know, with you, and if they may be applicable. So that's what this talk is all about. The first disclaimer is I'm not an attorney. So I just want to make that extremely clear. I can't give specific information about all the various laws and, you know, even in Connecticut. So, but I can tell you about my experience and what I learned. So the first thought, and I've addressed this to, you know, it says you may not need an attorney. Your loved one may not need an attorney, person that you're advocating for may not need an attorney. But I'm just going to speak with this language. So you may not need an attorney. And so that's something, you know, you really want to be careful of scammers. There's a lot of people out there that are looking to make a quick buck, right? It's very easy. This population's easy to give false hope to. So it's very important to do the research. When I went for my pardon, I did not use an attorney. I did everything. You know, I did seek out friends. I asked for advice. But when I was going in front of the board, what they wanted to see was me. They didn't want to hear somebody say, look, like if you're going, when you're going for, you know, to have your case heard originally, and you're trying to say guilty, not guilty, having that advocate, you know, that's part of the system. That's part of what's expected. But in terms of trying to demonstrate change and all of that, having somebody else speak on your behalf may not be the best way to go. So I'm not saying that you absolutely don't need an attorney. I'm saying that you may not need it. So, and then the next thing I have here is find out what's available, right? Is it early release? Is it a level modification? Can you get a pardon? Can you get expungement? Can it be something just saying, hey, this person's safe to work at this with this employer, whatever it is. So do that due diligence, check with the source and check with others. So that's tip number one. Okay. Tip number two is don't rush it, but start right away, right? So work on your own timeline. When you're looking at stuff like this, it can be overwhelming. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of different things. I like to say that I started the day I was arrested. I mean, I said, this is not the way I'm going out. You know, they took my shoelaces, they took my belt, and that was the, you know, and ending that day was the last thing in my mind. I wanted to clear my name. I wanted to have a new life. So I started thinking right away, but it took me, you know, over 10 years before, actually 12, if you count arrest and conviction. So 12 years before it actually came to fruition. The next thing I have to keep electronic and paper folders. So organized, anything, be really organized. If you do something good, put it in a folder. If somebody says something nice about you, put it in a folder. So just having that organized, I had an electronic one, you know, and a paper folder. So, and I kept it, it went from year to year. I had a filing cabinet, went year to year, and just kept building on it. So, and then in terms of like any types of, if there are any questions that have to be filled out, you can write down some thoughts, put it away, come back to it, right? Come back to it a couple months later, fix it, repeat it, have somebody read it. But nothing has to be done all in one shot. And so it's, you know, what I'm getting at is this is all a process, not a one shot deal, just something to think about as evolving over time, almost like a lifestyle. Okay. Next tip would be doing pro-social volunteering and giving back to the community in more than a casual way. So what does that look like? And I know that it's very, very difficult to work with some of the larger volunteer organizations. You know, there are a couple of places that I tried to volunteer with that just wanted no part of me. But I didn't give up. I kept looking for different places. I did some things through, I'm sorry, give me one second. Is there a way to, I think that'll help. I just moved the chat over because it was popping up at me. Sorry. So things like, you know, for me, there were volunteer opportunities in the business community. Because that was something that I was familiar with. There were volunteer opportunities through my synagogue. There were volunteer opportunities. And then later on, I did some work with social justice type organizations. But the other thing I want to point out is that pro-social volunteering doesn't have to be a formal organization. It doesn't have to be some big name. It helps. It helps to have somebody who's there to tell all the wonderful things that you've been doing and to have things documented in that way. But it can also mean helping the neighbor, elderly neighbor, mow the lawn, or getting groceries for somebody, or taking care of a relative. You know, whatever it is. But be thinking about that. What am I doing that's actually giving back to my community, however you define community, and making that just part of your life. So you're not seeing my slides, and I'm just, oh, I'm sorry.
You're doing a fine job, so it's okay. There we go.
Much better. All right, well, so let me go back a second to share with you all. No, it's okay. I apologize. I'm glad I saw that. I was not reading the notes. All right, so we're on tip number three. All right, so I told you I'm a morning person. This next one I have here is put your own mask on first. So to truly help others, you've got to be as strong as possible. And I've seen a number of people that jump into advocacy and doing other things and putting themselves at risk in different ways. So, and I think it's really important to get yourself stabilized before really you can do some things to help other people, but really be thinking about what do I need to do to get myself in a good position to actually be able to do more for other people, right? And sometimes, you know, and some of the things that we do, and that could be like, you know, going out and testifying for a bill or something. Like if you know it could get picked up by the newspaper or something like that, you got to pick and choose. And so, there are things that I have more flexibility to do now than I did a few years ago. So I would just say, just keep that in mind and move on to the next one. So this next tip that I have is really interesting. I'm talking to a group of people at an organization called WAR. So one of the things that I really recommend is avoiding really aggressive terminology, the military terminology, the sports terminology, the fight, the battle, the beat. You know, it's we're really talking about a struggle and an advocacy, but it's one thing. Other people can use that type of language, but if you want to give the impression that you're not a threat to anybody, it's probably not the best thing to be doing to walk around about talking about beating the opponents and beating them. And I think of everything that I think about is not us versus them, but really trying to change hearts and minds and bring people to deal with harm reduction and that sort of thing. So I personally stay away from all of the occasionally it slips out because I'm human, but I try to stay away from as much of the aggressive language as I can. Okay, so now we're up to writing your own character references. And I'm going to spend a few slides on this. And I know that this is something, when I say this to people, they some people go, aha, and other people say, I've done that. And other people look at me kind of funny. So, writing your own character references. And when I say write your own, that means, everybody's got somebody in their circle that's a good writer. So, I'm very good writer. But if I was doing this for another family, if I had a family member in the situation, I'd be the one writing for, I'd write for them. So it's really important to write those letters I'm just looking at my notes. I'm looking at Ann right now on my screen, and I would say, hey, Ann, the situation that I'm in, I'm looking to get some relief. I need a character reference letter. I know you're super busy, right? I know you're super busy. I've written a draft for myself that I can share with you. But what I would like to ask is you take a look at that. If you're willing, I'll give that to you and you can start over. You can add to it. You can take away from it, whatever you want to do, right? So that way, when I give it to Anne to write this letter for me, she's not looking at a blank page and, oh my God, this is a big chore. This is, oh, okay, I've got something to work from. I've got something I can work off of and start with. So it's showing compassion to her. It's saying, hey, this is a favor for me. And I'll tell you that the people that I did this with, every single person came back with enhancements that blew me away. So, I had the core written and they would say things that were incredible. So that's my point about that. And now in terms of who to pick, typically non-family members are the best. Having a family member, depending on the situation, may be appropriate, but I stayed away from my family, right? I went to the outside world. And the reason I say that is because they are, they look the way that they'll be looked at by a judge or a panel, right? It's these people are biased because they're your family. So non-family members, but having something from a family member, depending on the situation, may be very appropriate. So that's not a hard and fast rule. So the next one I've got here is So if there's a template that's provided by whatever the relief is, you know, use that template, find out what's being asked, make sure that it's being followed. And then you would write in the voice of the other person. So, it, you know, it's not everything would sound like it's coming from the person who's writing it, but you get an opportunity to share the different parts of the story, right? To build the whole picture. So what goes into it? It's who they are, how they know you, acknowledge the conviction without minimizing it, and providing examples of positive contributions. That goes back to the pro-social volunteering from a few slides ago that we didn't see until I turned on my slides, and explicitly state that you should be granted relief. So let's take a look at a couple of what's not good and what is good, right? So here's not good, right? Joe never meant to harm anyone. In addition, he really didn't, because it was only an online effect, right? So that's minimizing. That's trying to make excuses for the behavior, whatever, right? So, but a good one would be, you know, Joe shared with me his offense, how much he's learned in the process, made positive changes in his life. The person I know today is trustworthy, responsible, you know, goes out of his way, whatever it is, right? So just all that sort of positivity. This next one, watching hearings. So in Connecticut, we have, and I've got this link here, you can actually go and watch pardon hearings. You can watch commutation hearings on YouTube. You might have in your state, you might be able to go and sit in a hearing and watch it live. But if you don't, I still say, seek out the Connecticut Board of Pardons and watch those hearings. You get a feel for what types of questions are being asked, what they're looking for, right? So I must have watched hours of pardons for over a number of years prior to actually sitting in front of the board myself. So I got to hear what they were saying, what they were concerned about. And actually, you know, it helped me, it guided me in terms of some of the things and some of these tips that I'm sharing, the pro-social volunteering, taking responsibility, you know, all there's a whole thing that I probably left out here, you know, making sure, I can't remember if it's coming up, but, you know, not minimizing, but dealing with showing remorse for any harm that was done, never minimize. Oh, here we go. Looking critically at what you did, put it into larger context and show self-awareness and growth. So what do I mean by that? You know, understanding, being able to articulate the why. Why did I do what I did? Why? What happened? What was the circumstance? How can I demonstrate that what I did was not something that's going to repeat? Because I understand it, because I understand who I am, because I put in place the changes. So understanding that, you know, there, and everybody's got a story. I mean, it could be, I think I heard somebody say early on that there's a loved one that has autism. It could be, you know, we've read up on autism and the whole, and everything that the criminal justice system and how this is, and that, and it could be somebody who was young. I know early on, there was another gentleman that was talking about his case from when he was very young. It could be understanding the brain science and talking about that. It could be understanding abuse if you were abused. So it's really being able to look critically at it, understand it, kind of, and being able to articulate all of that. This is what I was referring to a little bit earlier ago, or a little bit before, you know, you're not trying to prove you're not guilty in this case, right? In terms of whatever it's, the relief that I'm talking about, whether it's a pardon or it's a tear reduction or any of those types of things, you've already gone through and been convicted, right? So this is not about guilt or not guilt. It's taking full ownership. It's saying, look, this is me. This is demonstrating the true remorse. There's actually a book out that's called On Repentance and Repair, Making Amends in an Unapologetic World by Danya Ruttenberg. And it talks about making amends and repentance. So it demonstrates some of these steps in terms of what what demonstrates true remorse, and how do you make sure you're not repeating things from the past? This one. So getting a professional risk assessment by a recognized expert. So I know ATSA is an organization that's in many states. Here in Connecticut, we have a group called CATSO, Connecticut Association for the Treatment of Sex Offenders. And it's worth it for any of these things to go to an organization that's recognized by the legal system, get an assessment, even if it's not asked for, which, you know, brings up a point from early on when I was talking about being organized, and that's providing supplemental information. So let's, you know, like in my case, when I'm going in and I'm applying for this pardon, there were very specific questions that were asked. And then there was an opportunity, whatever you know, providing supplemental information. So there you go. Provide a supplement that shows strength. So that's tip number 11. We're getting close to the end. So, what supplemental information? So it could be additional circumstances around what was happening. It could be degrees earned. It could be any professional recognition. If you're, you know, I'm not a sports guy, but if you're good in sports, you know, and you're doing something, put that in there. If you're volunteer recognition, credit score, religious activities, anything that you got that can say the kind of person that you are, you want to put that in that folder, have it ready to go, and then pick the ones you want to include when it's time. One thing I included, one I didn't mention this earlier, is that I was actually eligible in Connecticut for a pardon 5 years prior to the time that I got it, and I applied. I did not get a hearing. So they have a pre-screening and then a hearing. And in the pre-screening, they sent me back some information, and it said, not enough time had elapsed, you're on the registry, seriousness of the offense. Those were the reasons. So I took each one of those reasons and I wrote a page about them and included that in my application 5 years later. So now if you do get to the point where there's an actual physical hearing, these are some tips. Tip number 12 involves some sub tips on the hearing. So one is professional dress. I would say get a nice new shirt, dress with in a suit if you're a guy. If you're a woman, very conservatively dressed. Know who you're facing, like who it is. If it's a panel, know who they are, research them. Like in Connecticut, there was a board, all their names were online. I was only going to be in front of three of them, but I knew something about each person, just in case they were the ones that I was going to be, that were going to be questioning me. Prepare a statement, a very brief statement. You know, this is basically explaining why, showing the remorse and explaining why you believe you're deserving of this relief, and why you need it, and really do that research. My final tip here is that the whole process is an emotional roller coaster. There's because if you're trying to apply for some sort of relief, you're worried about what happens if it doesn't come. You're worried about if it does come, you know, and writing out a lot of this information can bring it back multiple times, right? So as I talked about, there might be there was a section, describe exactly what you did, describe what you learned, you know, so I would take that out and look at it. And it was a lot of reliving it. So there's reliving it. And then there's that hopeful aspect of what if I actually get this relief? So it can go up and down, right? And I think it's just something that you got to be really prepared for, because it's real. You know, I mean, I was talking to someone who's in Michigan, trying to get off the registry in Michigan, and he had a hearing that was set for this week. And he sent me an email and said, I don't know why, but I'm not even on the schedule. And he was devastated. And then today I got another email saying, oh, by the way, I'm back on the schedule for next week. So, but that's what I mean, that roller coaster, like even on the day of my pardon, it was in February. I actually have this thing that I wear here. My wife got me that this year. It's got the date on it, February 2nd, 2021. But on February 1st, 2021, here in Connecticut, the state shut down because of a massive snowstorm. So I was terrified. And this was, you know, 2021 was still during the days of heavy COVID in Connecticut, at least. And so everything was online, but they weren't even, they were shut down to the point where there was no Zoom hearings, there was nothing going on. So I was, I didn't even know until about 9 o'clock on the day of my hearing that there was going to be a hearing that day. So it was really scary. So that's the presentation. Just a word about Restorative Action Alliance. This is our mission statement. Like I said, we're in Connecticut and New York. We just have this through education, litigation, and advocacy. I know this sounds similar to a lot of the mission statements for groups like ours, but Restorative Action Alliance helps build safer communities, which invest in primary prevention of sexual harm, meaningfully hold those accountable who cause harm, and safeguard the civil liberties of all. Amplified voices. So we, in June, we released one with a podcast with Emily Horowitz. We just talked with her about her new book. Our podcast is not only sex convictions stories. We cover the gamut, but we've got our fair share of those types of stories mixed in. We wanted to make sure we were reaching a broader audience. We didn't want to just be talking to ourselves. So, you know, we had Emily. The next one we have was a sex worker who was convicted, who's also trans. And that one's coming out very soon. We're like, the editing is done. It just has to be released in the next week or two. So that's really exciting. You can find it at amplifiedvoices.show, or you can look for Amplified Voices on any major podcast app. There's a couple, I noticed there were a couple that started after ours that are, it says like Amplified Voices. But if you don't see it, if it doesn't look like this thing here, and it doesn't say Jason Amber, that's not us. So if you're looking for us, that's how you find us. And that's it. That's what I got. So I'm going to stop my screen share. I can figure out how to do it. Stop share. There we go.
All right. Well, I have questions. I'm going to ask you my questions first, and then I'll raise the floor to questions. But anybody, when you've got questions, you know how to go to reactions. And when you go to reactions, there should be a, right at the bottom, there should be one that says raise hand. So line up your questions for Mike. Okay, so I typed a few questions while you were talking. My first question was, you talk about putting your own mask on first. Can you give us some examples of what that felt like for you? What kinds of things did you do to put your own?
Oh, you just muted yourself as you're talking. So what kind of example? That's, you know.
You can think on that. You can come back to that one.
You know, there was, so I'll give you a slight example. So for instance, I'm not as public. Like I'm here with my last name, right? But I'm on Twitter. I use and the registry. I don't use my name, right? Because I can't because it could hurt, you know, it could hurt my family, it could hurt me. So you know, that's one slight example, like being able to go out and testify or doing, like I have to worry, I don't call in sick so I can go to a hearing. Right. I mean, there are things that I have to, because I have to be employed, I have to earn a living. So there are things that I do where I have to take care of me, I have to take care of my family, and I have to worry about them. So those are some examples of putting my own mask on first. Right. I mean, I do what I can. There are times when I say, hey, there is a big important hearing coming up, and I, you know, at this point, the guy that I work for knows my history. He's known it since the first day I started working there. And I'll tell him, hey, I'm going to be taking the day off and I'm going to the Capitol. Just be, you know, so he knows. I was really glad I did that in March, because when I testified for a bill in March, the Hartford Current ran a story, and I ended up like 2.5 paragraphs of this relatively short article. So, you know, those are some of the things that I mean by that.
Okay. All right. Another one of my questions was, how long did this whole process take from the, I mean, you said you started the day you got arrested, but
So the actual application, I came off the registry. I didn't want to reapply until I was off the registry. I came off the registry in July of 2020, so 3 years ago now.
Was that automatic, or did you have to apply for that too?
In Connecticut, it was automatic. However, let me share this lovely torturous story with you. So it's July. It's this time of year. It's July 2020. And I know that I'm supposed to be coming off the registry any day. And I get I have this, you know, with the post office, you get advanced notification of what's coming in the mail. So I see I've got a letter from the Department of Public Safety where you have to register. Now in Connecticut, it's all done through the mail. But so I got this, I see that I've got this, and I'm really excited. I'm going to get this letter telling me that I'm done. Letter comes, I open it up, and it says, it's time for you to come and get your picture taken. And this is 2020. So we're still in Connecticut, was like everything shut down, you know, so like you got to stand out. It was hot day. You got to stand. So I call up the office and I get three different stories about, no, you don't have to come because you're going to be coming. Yes, you do have to come. We don't know. Right. So because I wanted to make sure I was doing everything right. Last thing I wanted to do was get arrested when I was so close. So I drove, it's like 40 minutes from my house. I drove down to the police station. I'm standing outside. You know, I call, I say, I'm here. They bring me in. They take my picture. They put it up for one day and then they took it down. So, and it was funny because the same day that they took my picture, I had my picture taken, like somebody had taken it with my phone. I had a picture that somebody had taken or maybe texted to me. And then a picture that they took, and my face was like distorted from their, you know, from what they do. It was like pulled out versus I look, you know, in one picture, I look like a really happy guy. In the other one, I looked like a monster. And it was just like, I'm so glad to be done with this. So, I mean, that was my experience with that. But then they send me a letter that said, you are done. So your question was, how long did the pardon part take? So I didn't apply like immediately in July. It was, I think it was at October. And then I got notified around November, December that they were passing me on to a real hearing. And then I got notified that this hearing would be in February. February. So it was from really October to February.
Not that long.
It wasn't that long at all.
No, I thought you said you applied once before and didn't get a hearing, and then you applied again later.
I applied 5 years before. Nobody was getting it at that point. Nobody that had any conviction, sex offense conviction, was even being was getting a hearing. I applied, and that one actually took longer before I even heard. I think it was 6 months before they came back and said no hearing. You know, but they did. They made a couple phone calls to people that I had listed as references, but then they said no.
Okay. All right. I see Janet has her hand up.
Yeah. So I know this is really about getting the pardon for your parole or whatever, but when you said that you were notified that you were off the sex registry, how long were you on the sex registry for?
10 years.
And was that because of the tier that you were on? It was an automatic just 10 years?
It was, you know, you're in Connecticut, you're either 10 years or life. And I am not sure how they determine that, to be honest with you.
Huh. Well, that's pretty good. I mean, because here I'm in Louisiana and it's 15 years or more life. But I've been told that you, after 10 years, you can apply to have it reduced to the 10 years. But I'm thinking what you have said, to come with all this preparedness, that's probably would work for when you're trying to get off the registry sooner too.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, when we talked about this presentation and when I was putting it together, it's the lessons learned that I'm sharing are for all types of relief, because the pardon is not of it. The other comment I will make about about a pardon, you know, and I say that like in Connecticut is like one of the only places where it's available. However, it wasn't even available to in Connecticut. There, I see Amber's hands up. It wasn't even available in Connecticut, you know, when I was starting out. Like I was thinking about it from the day I was arrested, like I said earlier, but it wasn't something that could have been a reality. So what I'm suggesting is being ready for whenever there is an opportunity. You don't know what's going to happen in a state. You know, all of a sudden a different party gets in control or different people or the rules change for a very short window. And you might only have a very short window to jump and get in. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to be as ready as possible so right. that the opportunity is there to take it. And if the opportunity is there to get to go from 15 years to 10 years and you've done 10 years, then you want to take it. You don't want to wait, you know. You don't want to wait, but you want to. So that's why I said at the beginning, you want to start early, but take your time. Right. So it's a matter of like, nothing should be done in a panic. Everything should be really methodical. And a lot of these things like writing down the story, writing down really succinctly, being able to articulate, this is what I did. You know, this is what I did. This is why I feel bad about it. These are all the things that I've done since. This is how I've put it in perspective. You know, all of that stuff, having that all written down. And ready to go for whatever type of relief. And I mean, I hate to be a lot of this stuff's been positive, but let's face it, you know, in a lot of places, things can get even worse, right? They can turn around and they can say, you're on 15 years, but we're going to have you go to 20 and you've got residency restrictions now. And so, but there might be this opportunity to go in front of some sort of panel to get that reduced. We don't know what that's going to look like 5-10 years from now. So, you know, that's why I titled the whole talk, like playing the long game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank
that's
you.
That's a good point. And honestly, I think it's good for you to ask for things, even if they say no. My partner went today to the YMCA. You know, he applied to go to be a member of the YMCA and they told him to turn him down. And you know, he wrote him a letter and got a face-to-face meeting, and they'll probably say no anyway. But I think it's really good to do those kind of hard things and try things.
Did you say YMCA?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, YMCA is really bad across.
Well, yeah, I agree. That her original message to him said, you know, basically was like, if you think you're not really on the registry, here's what, you know, here's how you check that. And if you are, she kind of implied that they have made exceptions. She's like, well, if okay. they've made exceptions, we're going to go ask for one. All right. I see. I assume Dana, you're done with your question. So I'm going to go to Amber.
Hey, Amber.
I'd love to see what you look like, Amber, if you want, or I could look you up on the internet. Anyway, it's your turn to ask a question, Amber, if you're ready.
Maybe she's
took a potty break. Oh, okay. I'm unmuted now.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry. I would love to show you what I look like right now, but I look pretty wretched. So you'll have to catch me on a better hair day.
That's all right.
I just wanted to sort of share, and Anne, I'm glad that you made the comment that you just made. You know, when we're talking about like being ready for whatever opportunity, and advocating for yourself, having some of those things at your fingertips, I know in our lives has helped us. We recently had a situation where we had to advocate pretty hard for my husband to be able to attend his daughter's graduation. And there's like a child safety zone and there's this and that. And so during those conversations, I was able to like articulate, you know, and obviously we're pissed because we have to do this because we shouldn't have to be making this big case that he's really a good person and he has this, you know, low risk assessment and all of that, but it's what had to be done. And so at the end of the day, we had all of those things available to us so that we could make the case that it was safe for him to attend this event and therefore he was able to attend his daughter's graduation. So I just wanted to sort of share that.
Which was happening during the NARSOL conference.
Yes. So thanks for letting me share that.
Michael C., I just unmuted you and you're not Michael. You're a different Michael.
You are correct. Thank you. And I don't know if I was in order, so I hope I'm not jumping the line, but thank you
for
sharing that about your lived experience and tackling, here, I'll put myself on camera, the challenges of kind of restoring yourself in society and keeping records and developing a pattern of behavior, which is more necessary for people in this kind of a situation than arguably otherwise, you know, and so whether that goes to a court, an employer, whoever it goes to, you can feel a little bit of confidence that you have this record of good things achieved rather than having to rely on this kind of default neutral with the sex offender label, then casting a negative pall over everything. And that's kind of, you know, the lazy default. So good for you advocating for yourself and helping other people advocate for themselves as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. You know, the other thing I'd add to that is, you know, we're the minute you're in this, you know, you're convicted, or even arrested, not even convicted, the minute they're arrested, you're told what you can't do, all the things you can't do. You can't, you know, you can't be around, you can't have a camera, you can't be around kids, you can't be on the internet, all these different things you can't do. But nobody sits back and says, well, what can you do? Right. And so started really thinking about what are the things that I can do and how do I contribute to my society? That makes a huge difference. Right. I didn't spend a lot of time. You know, I accepted the stuff that I wasn't allowed to do, didn't like it, but I worked on the things that I could do and made the lemonade.
I'm going to move on to Beverly. Are you ready to ask a question, Beverly?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much. What I wanted to know about was kind of along the lines of you're saying to get character references and file them and everything, and that is excellent advice. I am wondering, okay, if a person can't get on the internet or can't have a computer or something like that, I mean, how do you, I know that you can do paper files and everything, but how can you convince people to let you have a computer, let you get on the internet? Is there a way to kind of get around that?
Well, I've got a couple of responses to that. So the first is asking for internet access is another way, yeah, another collateral consequence that you're looking for relief for. So that's, you know, all the techniques we talked about, demonstrating positivity, demonstrating why and you're not a risk and pro-social and all that stuff, all that comes into play. However, you know, that one of the reasons I said I had a paper file and I had a electronic file when I started first 5 years while I was on probation, nothing I did was on the computer. Everything was written, right? So, and when you're asking for if you can't get on a computer, then, you know, hopefully there's somebody in your life that can help you, right?
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be the, you know, when I talked earlier about writing the reference letter, it could be somebody else writing it, or you write it down and somebody else types it, or whatever it is. But having at least one, you know, somebody who's, it's not an individual thing. It's, you know, it becomes a family, like everybody kind of working together. So there was another thought I had and it just escaped me. Oh, in terms of asking people, you know, even if you don't have the format and even if you don't even know what you're applying for, like if there's somebody in your life that you're like, hey, this is an opportunity. I may not get this again. Like as an example, before I was ready, you know, a couple of years before I applied for the pardon the first time, there was an older man in my synagogue who was, getting up there in years, very, very well respected by everybody. He knew all about me and he was, you know, he was a fan and he liked me. And I asked him to write one of the character reference letters 2 years before, because, you know, he was, like I said, he's getting up there in age. Don't know if something's going to happen, if he's going to be around at the time that I actually needed to put my information in. So, you know, taking advantage of those opportunities, always thinking about it is one of the tips.
Okay, that's very good. Thank you so much.
Okay, sorry, I'm typing. I had one more question and then I think there might be another hand up. My last question was, you know how you said you like researched all the people who were gonna be on your parole board? like, did you, were you able to say like, hey, you know, like, were you able to like throw something out that, that made somebody smile or, you know?
He was, you know, it wasn't an opportunity. I only spoke for like 5 minutes. It was really quick. It was unbelievable because it was, I told you about the snowstorm and I was the last person to go. You know, my name starts with a W. The first they went with anybody who had an attorney and then they went through the alphabet. So I was on this Zoom call from like, you know, sitting there all, I made sure everything looked good. I was in my white shirt, my jacket tie from like 7:30 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon when they finally came to me. But it made me more comfortable knowing their background, knowing like if somebody had worked for a particular organization, you know, I would stay away from, you know, if somebody was with the Department for Children and Families, that might be different from if they work with people with alcoholism, right? So in their past. So I wanted to know who they were.
Being over-prepared makes like kind of calms you down.
Absolutely.
Having watched all those hours of footage and having learned all the things you need to know. So you're not thinking, oh, am I going to accidentally step on someone's toes? Yeah. Right.
You know, if I found out somebody, you know, played a musical instrument, I might've said something, but you know, that was not appropriate and didn't come up, but you never know.
Yeah. Okay. Someone's asking if you could share your tips again. Could you maybe, I don't know, is it a link that you could share?
I can, what I can do is I created a one pager to go along with it that has it. I don't know if you got that handout at the meeting, Ann, but I can email it to you electronically.
Maybe you email it because I don't know how to, like, I don't actually have access to email the people. Whenever I want to send something out, I give it to Chuck and Chuck sends it out. I don't do any of the technical stuff at all. So even if you sent it to me, I wouldn't know how to get it to them other than putting it in this chat right here. So maybe if you could find it.
Tell you what we'll do. Amber's on the call. I'll tell her, Amber, let's put it up on our website and then we'll.
There we go. Perfect. Yeah. I'm actually still waiting for all the videos from the NARSL conference. Cause there's some that I didn't get to see that I'd like to look at still. And I'm like, can't wait to see all those. Let's see. The other thing that I wanted to say, we got 3 more hands up, but I wanted to say that, you know, you tell people to do good, you know, do pro-social volunteering. Doing pro-social volunteering to put it on your resume is great, but honestly, I think the real value from doing that volunteering is the benefits you get from doing the good thing.
Absolutely.
Which I know from, you know, I've been a volunteer my whole life. And so like my joy juice when I'm volunteering is like ready made. It knows it comes fast. But if that's not something that you've had a lot of time for in your life, I encourage you to try it because it's really pretty great. My partner has not had a long history. You know, he's been a pretty busy guy most of his life and he just hasn't been something that's been modeled for him a lot. And so, you know, I'm constantly telling him like, I think you'd really get a lot out of this. This isn't just something you're doing to put it on your resume. This is something you should do for yourself. Okay, sure. Becky, you're up.
Okay. So am I muted?
You're good.
Okay. So this is all new to me. I did not even know this was something that was an option at all.
It may or may not be in your state.
Well, and it's not my state. My son's situation was that he was living in Colorado. It was an internet thing. The person was in Kansas. It was investigated by the FBI and Colorado, both of which said it's not worth pursuing. Kansas completely threw the book at him. So he accepted a plea and we hired a lawyer and all that. And then when it was over, he didn't have to do time, but the plea, I think, to keep him out of prison was life on the list. And we were basically told by our attorney, this is it. You got no options, you know, nothing. So I guess my question is, I've Googled it before, like Googled, you know, can you, is this an option in Kansas or anything like that? But I don't find anything except just the, you know, the standard verbiage that they have on whatever. So I guess my question is, who do you reach out to for this kind of, to get, you know, see if there are any options?
I think you're doing it. first of all, like in a group like this, where there are people from all over the country, and other groups like this, and asking the question, I don't know the answer. But
like who, like would I contact like the Board of Pardons in Kansas or that's my,
I would, yeah. I mean, I would personally, you know, if it's me, I'd ask everybody. I would start with other advocates, whether it's here or it's, you know, the other, there's, you know, is there a group in Kansas that's advocating? Are there other groups that are doing things there? I don't know.
Oh, that's good. I've never,
I would look for them. I would ask other people. I would, as Ann said, you Google it. You can try to talk to some attorneys and see if you know, if you have a network at all of people. And just one person will lead you to the next.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I will say one nice thing about Kansas. My partner lives in Kansas. I'm in Kansas right now. One nice thing about Kansas is not only does Kansas not have residency restrictions, Kansas forbids their localities from making registry restrictions. And they have a big old thing on their website with all the reasons footnoted why they don't do residency restrictions. Yeah, and I've used that document from the state of Kansas and sent it to people, you know, when I'm trying to advocate for different things, saying, you know, this is a state who has footnoted Iowa and Minnesota and, you know, Louisiana. They footnoted all these other states for all the reasons why residency restrictions don't work and are actually counterproductive, because they make people less stable and less, you know, more likely to recidivate.
We don't have them in Utah either. We don't have residency restrictions.
That's great.
All of his restrictions are based on their laws.
Amber just put in the chat, you know, the Collateral Consequences Resource Center. If you just Google Collateral Consequences Resource Center, they have a website and there's a lot of information there. And you can check the Board of Pardons in that state, you know, in Kansas. So, you know, and as I said, it might not be available today, but it might be next year. Who knows?
Right. Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. It's been very
important. Good luck. I mean, it's just, you know, these stories are just so rough to hear, and you're living it. So,
yes. All right, Larry, you're up.
Yes. Thank you. And thanks for being here, Jason. Some good info. I just had two little tidbits, and the first one can actually help Becky. I was talking to my parole officer. I have lifetime parole. I'm allowed to be removed from parole, but I have to go to a judge. And so I was talking to a judge or my parole officer and simply asked her, okay, where do I start? She said, go to public defenders. The public defenders in your courthouse are aware of which judge is allowing people to be removed from the registry or from probation, et cetera, et cetera. And if you talk around to public defenders, they'll know those judges better. So at that, I told my probation officer, I said to her, look, I'm planning on using one of these two lawyers. Both the lawyers advertise on the Arizona Women Against Registry, az.womenagainstregistry, which I happen to run the site. And I've got two lawyers that advertise on there. Both of them really know about sex-related crimes. So my parole officer said, well, that's a good start too. But if you didn't have one, then you can go right to the public defenders and maybe write letters or ask around.
But Larry, don't you have to go back to the judge that sentenced you when you ask for to get off of parole?
Well, I am a federal. So the federal, they could put you anywhere.
We were told that my partner's federal. We were told that you have to go back to the same judge that sentenced you. Now, I'm not sure that that's, I assume that's true.
District 10 or Arizona. And, you know, I think that's actually true. Yet, you know, all that aside, I mean, yeah, lawyers can tell you a little bit more about what the temperature of the judge is. And that helps too. Another thing you could probably add in would be the assessment and treatment. If you've been through if you've had an assessment, I paid $100, which is cheap, for a certified counselor to assess me, and I have a very low assessment. You know, I've got a level 2 internet crime. And so I'm a lifetime probation, but I've got all this material accumulated to go in front of a judge. And those are the only two things I wanted to add, because most of your information, Jason, is fantastic. Just, you know, like if you actually went to treatment and you have some type of official SOTIP, I think it's called SOTIP. If you have those things in at hand, that helps a lot too. But mostly it's the public defender thing I wanted to throw in.
Perfect. And someone asked, I guess Michael asked, how current should a character reference need to be? And I know I referenced getting them, you know, like you might get them in advance. Like that's a special circumstance. I think you want something that's within the last couple months, you know, the format that they require could change. You want somebody who knows what you're doing today that can put that in. So, but, you know, let's say in the case, let's say I really wanted to have that letter from that one individual, and something happened and he's no longer with us, and it's, you know, a few years down the road and I want to use it, I'd put it in as the supplemental information I was talking about. So it's absolutely something that, you know, I wouldn't rest everything on an outdated letter, because I want something that's current, that shows exactly what's going on. And Amber put the a link to the printable resource there, the list. Nice job. And you're
all right, Ted, you want to go?
This was a little bit for Becky, because I'm here in Kansas. So I've been on it since 2003, and I only had a year left. I was 20 years old when they jumped me from being 10 years on my 1 year of probation and then 10 years of registering to lifetime. And I'm actually friends with somebody that I went to high school with that works in the sheriff's department. I'm very good friends with a sheriff, and the actual sheriff. I've had numerous conversations with him. Pardons is an absolute no-go in the state of Kansas. It just is not going to happen. They for registered offenders, it just isn't going to happen in the state of Kansas. I was told by a couple lawyers that one that I was offering to give $50,000 to try to figure something out, just to even get me moved down from tier 3 to tier 2, to just be done with it at some point, and was told the only way the state of Kansas will is a lot more states being like Pennsylvania and Montana, where the Supreme Court, but even the Kansas Supreme Court just a few years ago came out and said that it wasn't punitive and that what they did in 2012 was completely fine and it was civil. And so, and first people like me that seriously only took a plea bargain just because they said, it'll go, even my lawyer, it'll go away. You don't have to worry about this. You know, it's a slap on the wrist. It's not that big a deal. And I also didn't understand what the word ag meant. And that's what bumped me up to lifetime, was the word ag, meaning aggravated indecent solicitation. And I got popped for being a violent offender, because aggravated means I'm a violent person.
When lawyers,
all it was a random girl I had no clue, that didn't even have sex, just made out with her at a party, and that was absolutely it. And I've been doing this. But another thing about Kansas is, yeah, they absolutely have no restrictions. I go to, you know, I was able to do things at my two younger kids' elementary school every time they have family game nights, or because my ex-wife is the head of the PTO, and I used to have to go help set up when we'd have their Halloween trick-or-treating thing at school. The principals all know me. I mean, it's a really small community. Nobody's ever said anything to me. And in the state of Kansas, went to my oldest daughter's graduation. I go do stuff with her at her sorority, where she goes to college here in Kansas. I mean, they don't care. And even the own sheriff at my sheriff's department, who was the actual detective, has came up twice and apologized that I still have to do this, and said that he never, ever imagined that this is where I would be in my life.
Yeah.
Because even at the age of 27, Like I had already turned my life around where I built my own house. Like the only thing I hired done was sheetrock and concrete work. I built the kitchen cabinets, did the plumbing, the electrical, did all this myself. I've had the same job now for almost 18 years. Wow. And I'm still stuck doing this, registering for the rest of my life. But the people in my county are really, really lenient. Now, once you go up to Wyandotte County, up in the city where I work, those people are jerks. I got threatened last year to being turned in because I went and registered at the end of May, like 20 days after I'd renewed my driver's license. And the guy that was doing it, it's like, this is a major change. You now have to let us know within 3 days. I'm like, what? And the sheriff and the girl I went to high school with that works in the sheriff's department, she's like, don't listen to them. She's like, don't pay attention to what they got going on. I was like, oh, man, but it freaks you out. But the state of Kansas is a no-go. But one question I had for Jason was, is that only for Connecticut? Like you had to be convicted in Connecticut, or like, can I pack my shit up and move? Because I may possibly have, I may possibly have a 140-acre farm and a 1900 square foot house with 4 barns and 5 ponds that I'm ready to like put on the market and get the hell out of town.
No, unfortunately, no. I mean, it's a, mine was a Connecticut conviction. So if I was in, Kansas, I would have had to go back to Connecticut, you know, to go in front of them to get that conviction, you know, to get the relief from that conviction. But, you know, I hear your story and I hear you saying forever.
Because I travel so much, right? And that's another thing. The girl knows and the couple shares, they know I travel all the time. They don't say nothing. I got stopped. Sure. And I did get a warning when I got stopped in New Hampshire. But I go traveling up to Massachusetts, New Hampshire. I'm actually going there next week. All the time, and I don't know, they kind of know I do, but I don't do the whole, man, I would love to just pack my shit up and move to the Northeast, though. I just got to figure out a way off this stupid list.
Yeah, and certain states
are a lot more stricter than Kansas about letting everybody in God's country know where you are.
Things change, you know, a court case will come down and say, you know, one thing, and you know, it forever isn't always forever. I know it feels like forever and it really does suck, but we got to maintain at least a little bit of hope.
This is true because you see what just happened in Montana. Out of every state in the United States, I never thought Montana would have been one of the ones that just came out and said, hey, if you were convicted prior to 2007, you're back to the 10-year thing, meaning I would have been done.
Yeah. All right, Becky, you're up.
I just have a quick question. So with it being, he's talking about, you know, being able to go to school and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just wondering here, I don't ever remember anything being said here about my son not being able to go to a school event. Well, actually, no, that's not true. But so I'm guessing that, I mean, what's covered in Kansas, what's covered in Utah? You know, it's like, whose rules are we living under here? Does anybody know that?
Your son is physically in Utah?
Wow. Yeah, he has to follow Utah's.
I would think it'd be Utah.
Okay, so.
Yeah, it's the state you're in presently in.
That's where the rules apply. Okay, that was all.
Now, I think if you want to be like taken off or anything like that, like my partner's in Kansas right now, but if he wants a petition to be taken off supervision, he has to go back to his original judge in Missouri. Unless you've petitioned, like, I think you can ask for, you know, if you move, I think you can ask the new state to take your case, but they get to decide if they want to take it or not. Right. And I don't know why they would.
Well, and yeah, I mean, getting them here on, what do they call it when they're on probation, you go to another state. We had to go through that whole song and dance. Mm-hmm. Interstate compact. Yeah. But they allowed it. So whether or not they do anything else, I don't know. I guess that's where I could start.
So I don't see any other hands up. Becky and Mike are already done, right?
Yeah.
Larry, you could talk to us about this Michigan Supreme Court ruling. That's exciting. I know it's old. Oh, there we are. Got to unmute, Larry.
And thanks for giving me permission to unmute. That law was up and down, and Michigan is up and down. Someone was speaking earlier, that things change, you know, and boy, do they. I guess Mike got a question. We'll let him go in a second. But other than that, I mean, that you just have to keep an eye on it. And I follow the Arizona legislation a lot. Whenever there's a session, I highlight along with who's the Arizona group? Is it Narsol? Or there's another group that's pretty big and they watch all the bills. So we don't get things thrown on to the bills. In fact, we've had a little success about being adamant about saying, no, you can't add this all on here. This is just, you know, ridiculous, but or whatever. But other than that, yeah, the Michigan law, you just have to kind of keep up with them because that has been around since 2011, but somebody struck it down at certain levels. So it's going to depend on which states. I thought that was going to be a big thing because the punitive is very important. If we can prove it's punitive, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, that's a trick there, you know, I mean, wow. And other than that, if you're on the registry, watch out for, I got a phone call on a Sunday that said you missed a hearing to be removed from the registry. And now you have a warrant out for your arrest. And I called the county sheriffs and I found out it was a fake. Yeah. You know, they said, oh, you got to come down right now and or we're going to send somebody to pick you up. So kind of keep your eyes open for those kind of things, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Ah. Yeah.
Larry, I muted you accidentally. I thought you were done. You're good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Hang on. What was I going to say? I think that's a really important thing. And for those of you who are like, you know, wondering what could I do? I've got a little extra time. What could I do to be helpful to the movement? You know, that's what Larry said. Keeping track of the bills that are going through your legislature is really important. I know Joanne does that for us in Missouri. You know, she's constantly like, I don't even know how she does it, but she always knows what's coming up and it's really important. You know, a couple months ago, we got an alert. Vicky said, oh, they're gonna hear some testimony tomorrow. And, you know, Vicky and I drove down there the very next day and were there in the room giving testimony. And, you know, the parts of that bill that we hated didn't go through. And I don't know if it was because we were there, but, you know, it was worth doing. So, you know, it's not possible for one person to follow all the legislatures and all their nonsense. But if you've got a little extra time and that's something you could do for people in your state, that's a really good idea. Oh, Tila. Hang on, let me find you. Tila. I can't see where you're at, Tila, but if you have a question, just, oh, there you are. There you are. You can unmute yourself. I think, there you go. I think you're unmuted. Nope. Now you're unmuted.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that how you say your name?
Tila. Yes. Thank you. My question is that my son was 14 at the time of the allegation, and then he was 19 whenever it finally, he did a plea bargain, and he is a tier 3 offender. I moved him. Yes. And because of the age of the person of the situation is the reason he is tier 3. And I moved him to Louisiana because we live in a very small town. Well, not really small, but we live in Branson, Missouri. And so we packed up and moved to New Orleans, Louisiana. And so if he were to petition to be off of the registry, which I think right now is a lifetime registry, but then it's adjudicated, and I don't know if he would fall under that because he did have to be certified as an adult. And I just wondered if anybody had any input on that. He will come off of probation on August 10th.
Can you repeat your question? I'm sorry. I'm trying to do too many things.
That's okay. Son, I'm sorry.
He's 14. He's tier 3.
I don't even know how to ask
it. Did anybody else get that?
He was 19. They certified him as an adult at 19. He took a plea bargain at 21 and will be off of probation August 10th in Louisiana. And we want to try to petition the Missouri courts after he's off of probation. But I don't know if because he was certified as an adult and he is tier 3, if that will even matter. It will be a lifelong register.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. All right, I'm going to go to Mike. And if anybody thinks of an answer, let me know. All right, Mike, you're up.
Hey, how you doing? I had a couple of questions for Jason, but the woman that was just talking, I think I don't know if this might help her at all, but just only because the age of her son and the adjudication type stuff, she might want to research the Adam Walsh Act. And there is a under Title I, there's a section, I think it's 111 Article C, or title, I'm looking at it right now, so give me a second. It's section 111 definitions. There's a number 5, so maybe take your pen and write this down. So section 111, part 5 is the Amy Zeidler expansion of sex offense definitions. It primarily speaks to young, between 13 and there's a 4-year age exemption. And the only reason why I bring this up is because you might be able to, under federal law, bring some sort of injunction in your state. And I don't know what the details of your son's situation were, why he was charged as an adult when this happened when he was 14. I don't know, but you could probably maybe try to implement some federal law to trump state law under what's it called, federal preemption supremacy or something like that, where basically federal law will always supersede state law. But you might want to look at the Adam Walsh Act. Again, it's under definitions, section 111, and I believe it's article 5 is the Amy Zeidler. You could probably just Google Amy Zeidler definition. But anyway, going to my questions for Jason here, I was wondering, I'm in Massachusetts, and I was wondering, is there a NARSOL chapter at all in Massachusetts?
So somebody else might know, I'm not affiliated with NARSOL. I was a speaker at the conference. I do know, okay. Paul Shannon's in Massachusetts, and he's like one of the original founders of the organization. And Amber's writing SOLPRI. So that's, so there is.
All right. I will Google that. Now the most important question is post your pardon experience, right? Like, you know, obviously you said something happened in 2020 and then you kind of went through the whole experience. I'm guessing it's been approved, obviously. You know, did you get like a certificate that you hang on your wall? Did your federal crime, when you do a federal background check on yourself now, does it still show up? Was it just removed from the state level?
So according to Connecticut, sent me a letter that said, these crimes are gone. They attached another letter that said, if anybody says to you or asks you if you've ever been arrested or convicted of a crime, you can legally say no. So, so the answer, and then I went, of course, I don't trust anything. So I went to the FBI and paid to get my record. And it doesn't show anything.
Right. So how is a pardon any different from, like, you know, when you look up like sealing or expungements, right? Because I thought a pardon is something that like the governor will have to like sign or something like that of your particular state, right?
So in my particular case, and again, you know, going back to my comment about not being a lawyer, there might even be lawyers on here that could answer the question, but I know that in mine was an expungement and a pardon. So, okay. You know, so they are different. So expungement means it's like totally wiped out and gone.
Right.
Pardon is, it could still be there somewhere if you go looking for it, I think, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Cause I'm kind of under the impression that, you know, when you apply for anything like that, obviously it's still public record, right? And different states have different time periods for things that are public record. And obviously if you get an expungement or a sealing or a pardon or whatever it might be, then it's still public record for, say, the next 10 years or something like that. So it's like, it still exists somewhere.
So from the time, it's not, it's the public record is the internet, right? It's right. Articles that were written 10 years after my arrest, when I was the president of my synagogue and they decided to have a moral panic in my town, right? That still exists on the internet. The Patch article that listed everybody the year before I came off the registry is still there. But there's no, if you go and you do any type of If you, you know, for any type, it's all gone.
You go to watchdog.com or something like that. You type in your name, it doesn't exist or whatever.
But it also, you know, the government, it's one of the things that happened was they said, you know, on the day of the hearing, there was a vote and there were three people on the panel. And Connecticut's the only one that's not done, you know, that's done with a board as opposed to the governor granting the pardon. So I was in front of a panel of three people. They voted unanimously on the spot and they said, you know, you've been granted this. It was actually not even immediate. It was, we need to now go back through and clear your record. I didn't get the official notification for a couple months. So they told, you know, they said, oh, congratulations. We're voting on it today. And, but then they said, but don't tell anybody, you got to wait a few months. So then I got that paper. And is it on the wall? No. Is it in a very safe spot? Yes. I also have something called 1Password, where I keep all my passwords and you can keep all your important documents. I have an image of it. So it's available on my phone or any computer, anywhere I want to go, I can get to it, you know?
Yeah. Because that's a good idea. I mean, like with myself, I photograph everything. I have stuff on Google Drives. I have stuff on my hard drives. I have stuff on everything, right? So if my house ever catches fire and it burns to the ground, you always have an extra. That's really important, like with everything, right? And then the other question, the last thought that I wanted to ask you was, did you ever have any like anxiety about, I know this is going to, it's going to sound completely wrong, but applying for something that you really want, right? And, you know, obviously you got that, but, you know, did you ever have anxiety? Like, now that I have that, I've sort of lost this identity that has sort of become part of me, sort of, right? In a weird way. Does that make sense? Or I'm not saying that you're proud of that identity, but I'm saying that it was sort of something that you were, and, you know, will you beat that without it, or how will you move on with, you know what I mean? Did you ever have anxiety about
that? No, I mean, I'm here. I went to that conference. I volunteer, you know, in this other organization up here. I do the podcast. I do, you know, who I am is who I am. Right. I know people thought about changing their name when they were arrested. I know of people who have, you know, tried to hide themselves, and I want to live an open life. And this is part of my story. I'm not going to run away from it. You know, I did what I did. I'm not proud of what I did to get arrested, but I am proud of everything that I did after that. I'm proud of owning it. I'm proud of doing all the work that I did to make sure that I don't do something like that again, to get it. You know, my life is completely different. I'm in a different marriage. I have I'm in a different at work. I have a very different relationship with my employer than I had before, where, you know, I was very driven. I wanted to get ahead. I want, you know, and it's very different. I mean, I actively work to manage stress, you know, cause, and so, and of course, as I'm sure you're aware, stress was part of my story, right? The things that happened was not being able to handle some very stressful situations, but the stress got infinitely worse after arrest and conviction. But I can handle, I have the tools, I have the network, I have all these things. So it's all part of my story. You know, good things and bad things that happen become part of my story, and they are who I am. And part of what I try to do is help make things better for other people. I don't sit around and say like, haha, I got it, suckers, I'm out of here. You know, it's how do I help? How do I stand up and say this whole system is, can I swear here, Ann? Can I swear here?
Yes, swear away.
This whole system is fucked up, you know?
It is indeed.
Right, the fact that we respond to harm by piling on more harm, and we hurt families and we hurt other people, it is just wrong. So, you know, I feel like I have an opportunity because I've been granted this pardon to be able to walk into a space and say, look, I've been able to prove to an independent board that's not easy that I am worthy of this pardon and that I can hold my head with anybody. And I'm telling you that I should not be the only one standing up telling you this. There's a million people out there that deserve an opportunity to stand in front of you just the way I was given an opportunity. And so that's the way I approach it, Mike. And that's the way I'm going to continue to live my life. Now, I have to factor in that there are other people in my life, right? There are other people that can get hurt. There's my employer. There's my kids. There's my, my father. So there are some things that I do, I'm not as vocal as I'd like to be.
Sure.
But I do what I can do within, while respecting their boundaries and respecting what they need, right? So that's where I am.
And I really applaud you for that. And honestly, I think that's the answer for us. We know that there are politicians who are ready to say the registry doesn't work. It's costly. It's a human rights problem. There are legislators ready to say that. But, because of all the sex panic nonsense they spread to the entire world to try to get that stuff all passed, well, now they're dealing with, okay, so they changed their minds. Great. You just got to look at the comments on any article about people forced to register on the internet to know that you can't just put the genie back in the bottle. So we need to get brave and we need to start sharing our stories with the people around us that we trust. We need to start, just get brave. And so I encourage every one of you within the confines of your space to do something that's just a little braver than you did yesterday every day, because the more people we talk to and the more people who get to see us as human beings and not, define us as the worst thing we've ever done, I think that the more likely we're going to eventually end this registry. Okay, well, I don't want to keep people longer than I'm supposed to. So two things. I met with Megan. So last weekend, I drove to Memphis and Megan and I sat down and we talked for hours and filmed a video. So that was exciting, but she's sick. That's why she's not here tonight. And then 2 weeks from today, we're going to watch this little short video and then we're going to be joined by the filmmaker or by the director of the film. I may or may not make it because I'm going to be in Iowa riding my bike from the West Coast to the East Coast of Iowa. And there's so many people that do that sometimes there's just no cell service. So I'm going to try to come, but no guarantees. So if I miss it, I'll see you in 4 weeks. I wish everybody the best. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Love you guys.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you, Jason, for filling in. You're a lifesaver. I'd love to have you guys on another time to talk Restorative Action Alliance, because that's really cool. And I think that would be such a big deal for so many people to be able to participate in something like that. I wish we could see that just across the board in every situation instead of jail. I think the world would be so much better.
For sure.
All right. So anyway, talk to Amber Blangus and see if she'll come and do a thing with us another time.
I think she's still here watching this stuff go by. I think she might still be here.
Yeah, Amber. Amber, you want to come back another time and talk restorative action? I'm looking for her. I think she must be gone. Anyway, yeah, check with her. I've got my first meeting in August, I think, is still open. Just put that on your little calendar. Two weeks in.
Well, I told you this is past my bedtime.
It is. Well, maybe we could schedule a really early one just for you. All right. Sleep tight, Jason.
Thank you. No, thanks. It was nice to meet everybody and I saw some familiar faces and certainly some new ones. And I wish everybody good luck on the journey.
All right. Bye. Sure.